And you see in Roman thought, in every aspect of it, in its political organization, in the setup of the Roman family, in Roman religion, in Roman literature, this emphasis on the worth of the individual only as a member of a larger group. This sort of attitude in America was not necessary as long as America seemed to be a land of unlimited wealth and opportunity. I think we're going to have to develop more the sort of attitudes that Romans had, and I think we can learn from those societies. I think we can learn the virtues of cooperation and self-sacrifice.
The importance of the classics today, next on Soundings.
The principal purpose of our voyage was not simply to gather the flora and fauna. That was my personal preoccupation. Rather, our mission was to explore and chart uncharted waters. To that end, the crew of the Beagle would drop a weighted line to the bottom and record the depth at regular intervals. The measurements were called soundings. They told us where we had been and would serve to guide those who followed.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, listen now to our program called Soundings. Thoughts and ideas about the present and the future with an appreciation for the past. Your host is Wayne Pond.
Sarah Mack and Cecil Wooten of the University of North Carolina are scholars in residence at the National Humanities Center, where Professor Mack is writing about Ovid's Metamorphoses and Professor Wooten is writing about the style of Demosthenes. The conversation for Soundings with Professors Mack and Wooten now examines the place and importance of the classics today. Professor Wooten, what is it that motivates you to look at these things and to devote your professional life to them?
It was only, I think, when I started teaching that I realized the real interest which classics hold. And I think that's in the study of ancient societies. I'm always amazed when I teach at how students jump up in class and say, well, that's very similar to problems we have today, or the Romans faced the same sort of personal problems which we face today. And many of their sort of reactions to these problems are very interesting because they sometimes saw more clearly than we do. I mean, in Roman society, for example, faced the problem of a very heterogeneous society. There were 100 million people of all different races and all different religions and all different languages. And Romans worked out a system that held these people together in relative peace for about 500 years. There was in Roman society, I think, very little racial prejudice. There was tremendous religious toleration. And I think there are a lot of admirable aspects. Romans worked out a political system that allowed more or less internal autonomy while retaining control of foreign policy. And I think, you know, it's a good model that we could follow in holding lots of people together, especially people of a very different sort. I think many of the sort of moral and social problems which we have to face were also faced by the ancients. And they answered many of those questions quite well, and I think it's very interesting from that point of view. As I say, it didn't dawn on me until fairly late in my career that there was a lot of content to classics, and it wasn't just the study of language, which I always thought it was.
Professor Wooten, I'd like to ask you to comment on some parallels between ancient Rome and the modern South.
Well, I think for many years, probably up until the last decade, Latin and Greek were really the core of the curriculum in the South. When I was in high school, which wasn't that long ago, everybody took 4 years of Latin. And I think the generation before that, people probably had 2 years of Greek as well. And in the plantation schools, I think Latin and Greek was probably all that was taught in the schools. I think this was partially because Southerners saw in Roman literature a sort of affirmation of their own values, a sort of closeness to the land, a cohesiveness in society, a sense of tradition, a sense of sort of religious awe and respect before powers in the universe which they couldn't understand. And I think in turn, the study of Latin in particular tended to reinforce these values. It's almost sort of a cycle. I think we still see it today. I mean, Southern society, up until about 15 years ago, tended to be very traditional, like the Romans. It tended to feel very close to the land. I mean, that marvelous scene in Gone with the Wind when Scarlett O'Hara picks up a handful of dirt and says, "This is all that matters." I think Romans felt that same sort of closeness to the land. This sense of family, that you're only a representative of your family, which has been going on for generations and generations. This sense of sort of religious all. I mean, Southerners, I think, tend to be religious people. Even Southerners who don't believe in religion, they still have this kind of all before powers in the universe which we can't understand. And I think also something you find in the South, which is very typically Roman, which you don't find really in the rest of American society, is a sense of hierarchy. I mean, Southerners are quite willing to accept that certain people are higher or lower on the social scale than they are. And there's a certain amount of respect for people who are higher than you are. I'm not sure this is true today, but it certainly has traditionally been true.
Well, it seems to me that there are a number of very interesting parallels. One would be that Americans, I think, have been outstanding in technology, that Romans and Americans have both been rather pragmatic people, and I think have excelled when it came to creating something useful as well as beautiful. One thinks of the Roman roads. Interestingly enough, modern roads are very often built right on the Roman roads. They knew how to do them. They knew where to put them. Things like aqueducts, which are beautiful to look at, as well as, you know, a big city like Rome has water being brought in. It seems to me that Americans have excelled in the same sorts of ways.
What about the intangibles? Are there parallels there that we need to be aware of between ancient Rome and America today?
I think to some extent, ancient Roman attitudes and American attitudes have been very, very similar in the past. In any case, I think both societies were initially agrarian societies, both in their own special way. Emphasized similar myths of concern, in fact. The Roman idea of Cincinnatus and his plow. You know, we have the city of Cincinnati, which is in fact named after an association of people, of generals of the time of George Washington, including George Washington, who belonged to this association, which believed very strongly in the ancient Roman ideals. And that's how Cincinnati got its name, way back to the Roman Cincinnatus. I think both cultures had some sort of sense of having lost something very important to its origins in leaving the plow behind, in becoming the sort of superpower that America has been, that Rome became. And I think American attitudes to Europe are similar to Rome's towards Greece, in a kind of mixture of feelings of superiority in having achieved a stable government, an empire, you know, and also inferiority of somehow not having a civilization that is quite as old, quite as respected, quite as grand.
I give a summation lecture in a Roman culture class, which I often teach, in which I fairly dramatically say that the Roman Empire is not dead, it's simply evolved into different manifestations. I mean, there are 350 million people in the world who speak languages which are directly derived from Latin, and who live in countries whose culture, both politically and morally, is very heavily influenced by Roman ideals. And in that sense, I could say, I think you could, one could argue, if he wanted to be extremist, that the Roman Empire is not really dead. It simply evolved into, it broke up and evolved into different manifestations.
Well, you have pointed out to me in our conversations that the classics are at once models of excellence, and as you are implying now in our conversation, they're a part of our own history, that they have carried over into the way we live. I wonder if you could comment on that, Professor Wooten.
Yeah, I think classics are models of excellence. For example, in literature, most of the literary forms of Western literature were worked out and in many ways perfected in the ancient world. And I think if you want to understand epic, for example, in Western literature, you have to know something about Homer and Virgil. I mean, they worked out the conventions of epic literature. I think in other ways, classical thought presents models of excellence in dealing with social problems and political problems and moral problems. In many ways, the most of the basic issues of Western thought were, I think, at least raised in antiquity and to a great extent answered in antiquity.
For instance, what would be one of
the
issues?
Relative merits of freedom and authority, or what's the best form of government, and what are the disadvantages and advantages of various forms of government? What are the sort of ultimate values in life? What's the value of the individual? I think going back to what we were talking about a minute ago, why the study of classics has declined, is these are the kinds of very important theoretical questions which everybody sooner or later in his life has to face. Unfortunately, 18-year-olds don't always see the significance of these problems. They're interested in how can I make money when I'm 22, or how is my life going to be more comfortable. They're not especially interested in the sort of question to which classical thought directs itself.
So the kids have been given too much freedom in taking courses and in the kinds of curricula that they want to follow. Is it who's to blame for this?
Well, I personally think it's probably school administrators. I mean, after all, they're the ones who decide what the curriculum is going to be. I don't blame the students. They are simply products of the society mm-hmm. that produced them.
And there is a swing back now. We can see universities are tending to move away from the open, sort of loose, design-your-own curriculum. At UNC right now, a massive undergraduate curriculum reform is underway in order to try and give the students some areas that all will share, mm-hmm. not necessarily specific courses you must take, Government 1-1 or whatever, but that you need some exposure to this area and to this area and to another area.
I'd like to come back to the issue that of these threads, these continuities between the ancient world and the modern world, and the social issues that we share, and the working out of those social issues. You mentioned, for instance, government and the treatment of individuals. What's going on today that reflects the influence of the ancients? Is that far too broad a question?
Well, I'm not sure I could say what's going on today that so much reflects the influence of the ancients. I see a lot of things going on today in areas in which we could learn a lot from the ancients. I was just reading, for example, about 2 months ago, an article in Time magazine on American renewal, and many of the things that the author of that article was recommending, such as developing somehow a more cohesive society, a greater sense of teamwork, playing down the emphasis on individualism and playing up the idea of duty to one's community. I think this is something that we can very definitely learn from Roman society, which put tremendous emphasis on.
But isn't individualism one of our cherished American ideals?
Well, I think personally that comes more from the Judeo-Christian tradition than it does from the Roman tradition, at least. The Greek tradition is quite different. But in Roman society, individualism was a pejorative word. To a Roman, individualism, I think, at least I'm talking about the official Roman view of themselves, which, as we all know, is often different from what actually goes on in society. But I think to a Roman, individualism implied a lack of concern and a lack of regard for the rest of society. And you see in Roman thought, in every aspect of it, in its political organization, in the setup of the Roman family, in Roman religion, in Roman literature, this emphasis on the worth of the individual only as a member of a larger group. And it's really the well-being of the group as a whole, not the individuals that make up that group, that's important. I think this can be traced back to the fact that Rome started as a relatively poor city in a fairly indefensible position with very few natural resources. And Romans realized that the only way they were going to be successful was to work together and cooperate and make a certain amount of self-sacrifice for the good of the whole. this sort of attitude in America was not necessary as long as America seemed to be a land of unlimited wealth and opportunity. But now that, our natural resources are shrinking, that we are heavily populated, that we live in sort of constant crisis, I think we're going to have to develop more the sort of attitudes that Romans had that you see in Japanese society, for example. And I think we can learn from those societies. I think we can learn the virtues of cooperation and self-sacrifice.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, you're listening to Soundings, putting ideas into circulation. Here again is your host, Wayne Pond.
Cecil Wooten and Sarah Mack are scholars in residence at the National Humanities Center, where Professor Wooten is writing a book about the rhetorical style of Demosthenes, and Professor Mack is writing about Ovid's Metamorphoses. Both Wooten and Mack teach in the Department of Classics at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. The conversation for Soundings with Professors Wooten and Mack is about the place and importance of the classics today. Professor Wooten, it's a difficult thing to try to give a thumbnail sketch of the decline of Roman civilization, yet you're drawing some interesting parallels here to the way America lives now and the direction that we're headed. What happened to Rome?
Well, I'll answer that at the risk of being simplistic. I think, as I say, Rome started off in a fairly difficult position, and what Rome achieved up until, say, the middle of the 2nd century BC was achieved primarily through cooperation and teamwork and self-sacrifice, hard work, basically sort of pioneer virtues and rural virtues. I think after 146, Rome became very wealthy. Romans realized they could sit back and enjoy the wealth of the world which they had conquered. Also, foreign ideas, especially from Greece, infiltrated into Rome, and there was a lot of emphasis on individualism and personal enjoyment and seeking after one's own pleasure. You know, as they said in the 60s, do your own thing and grab all the gusto you can.
The me generation.
And this, as always, tend to split apart society. I mean, there was an emphasis on individual pleasure and individual pursuits. There was a lot of wealth and a lot of power to be pursued, and I think it tended to split apart Roman society. And Rome experienced almost 100 years of almost constant civil war because of this. And this is exactly the sort of thing that I think the Emperor Augustus was trying to cure, and he did it fairly well. I think eventually it crept back into the Roman mentality. And
that's what's happening now in America, where...
Well, I think we're moving
too
more...
Too full of ourselves?
I think we're moving more away from individualism and back towards a sense of cooperation. I think our situation demands it. Our society can't function any longer.
Professor Mack?
As the Roman Empire was expanding, Roman economy was never all that it should have been. But as long as you could keep on moving outward, things worked out okay, but it did get to the point where there was no further to go. And in addition to the moral decline you're talking about, I think to some extent the Roman Empire got strangled by its own red tape, where I could also see a parallel in between Roman things and American things to some extent. It got to the point where the tax burden was so heavy, where the benefits were not in any way matched by the debits, by the constraints and restrictions on the people. I think that's one of the things that happened.
Yeah, I agree completely. Also, I think another problem was the problem of education. Romans, like ourselves, had a very narrow view of education. Their emphasis was just the opposite from ours. Roman education, during most of its history, put almost total emphasis on rhetoric, on speaking and writing well and arguing cases in court and that sort of thing. There was almost no emphasis on science, very little emphasis on philosophy. Consequently, there was very little technological development. I think it's dangerous for education to become too narrowly focused. I think in many ways our education has tended to become too narrowly focused. Mm-hmm. Students tend to study the social sciences and the hard sciences, and to exclude the humanities to a certain extent. It's almost the inverse of the situation in Rome.
Professor Mack, let me see if I can follow that up by putting to you a question about ancient Greece. What Professor Wooten has been describing is primarily, in his description of ancient Rome, a political empire, an economic empire, and yet it's to ancient Greece that we look now for the models of excellence in literature and in the arts, in philosophy. What went wrong there, and how did it go wrong? Are there parallels with the way we live today?
Well, I think perhaps what went most wrong in Greece was that although the Greeks had magnificent achievements in almost every area, I mean, when you think back to the beginnings of literature, philosophy, political science, art, architecture, geography, math, you name it just about, we go back to the Greeks. But the Greeks never seemed to manage to learn to live together or rule themselves, and that is where you have a noticeable difference and where the Romans really did succeed.
Does that mean too much freedom?
One is reluctant to say too much freedom, but perhaps so. Certainly when you think of Greek history and the incessant squabbles between the different areas, it was a deadening, ultimately.
Professor Wooten, the classics deal with questions about values. Can you comment on that? How is it that we can draw on the classics today?
Well, I guess I could speak personally in a sense. The value of cooperation with other people, the value of friendship, that's sort of more, I guess, social and political value. And when you read Cicero's philosophical works or Plato or Aristotle, you see that these values are presented as values which can be defended in and of themselves, quite apart from appeal to any higher authority. I mean, Cicero can argue that social cooperation and toleration are values which human beings should hold simply because society cannot function without them. You don't have to make any appeal to any higher authority. It's not proscriptive or prescriptive, even. It's almost descriptive. This is the only way society works.
Professor Wooten, students today have been accused of seeing in literature little more than an affirmation of the way they see the world, of their own notions of the world, rather than new ideas, rather than the values that are inherent in the classics. Can you comment on that? Can you change that situation?
Well, I think I wouldn't say that students see in literature an affirmation of their own world. I think they've been encouraged to see in literature an affirmation of their own world. This goes back to the emphasis in the 60s on relating to things, and teachers told students, read this novel and you can relate to it because you can see in it your own experience. As far as I'm concerned, the basic purpose of education, certainly in the humanities, is to broaden one's horizons, to expand one's experience, not to reaffirm it. Classical culture in many ways is very different from modern culture. I mean, the basic values of the Greeks and the Romans were in many ways very similar to our own, but also very different from our own. The nice thing about the studying classical culture is that you see a society which in many ways is very similar to our own and which holds many values which are very much like our own. And our own society in many ways stems from those societies. On the other hand, we see basically pre-Christian societies which have many values which are quite different from our own.
For instance?
I think, for example, when students read Virgil's Aeneid, and they see this extreme emphasis on self-sacrifice and suppression of personal desires because of duty to the state, and that this whole idea of duty to one's family and to one's gods and to one's state at the expense of one's personal enjoyment is something which I find students find very surprising, especially in the late 60s and 70s. When I taught Virgil, students were astounded that anybody could seriously hold a view like this, that you could honestly argue that this was a worthwhile approach to life.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting differences, though, I think, between the 60s and the 80s is that students no longer have to be persuaded to see that as a virtue, to see Aeneas's concern for his duty in the state. In fact, if anything, perhaps they go too far and say, oh, Dido had to be left behind. Oh, well, you know, love, individual human love, isn't as important as the ideal. So they tend, in fact, maybe to have swung a little too far and not see that Aeneas does have to go on, but it is at great cost to himself, and we are supposed to realize that.
Yeah.
And to see it as cost and loss, so that, you know, you neither the one nor the other really will do.
Yeah, exactly. I think in any case, Virgil's Aeneid is an absolutely beautiful and very moving explanation and exploration of the whole problem of what the individual's relationship to society is. I think Sarah's absolutely right. The answer is not simple, and Virgil doesn't present it simply.
Students today have been accused of being narrow-minded. How can the classics address that sense of insecurity? And how is it possible for the classics to make students have more than merely a provincial view of the world? Professor Mack?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to say that the classics in itself can make great changes.
How is it that a contribution is possible?
Well, it does seem to me, as Cecil was saying earlier, the idea that one expands through reading literature, which is my particular interest, people expand their horizons. They get away from their own narrow concerns. It does seem to me that in general, for the with liberal arts, with humanities, classics among them, you find that there are real people in many ways like us, but also in many ways different, who have, in fact, experienced many of the same sorts of problems. I think, to some extent, it's just stretching one's capabilities for thought, expanding one's horizons.
This is a painful process, though. Students don't want to do this. They argue against it. How do you convince them that it's desirable or important?
I think partly, just by convincing them really to read with an open mind, to see what's there. That's the starting point, anyway, it seems to me.
Yeah, I always tell students something which I very firmly believe, which is that unless your beliefs have been questioned, and unless you've persuasively been presented with other points of view, chances are you're going to lose that belief one sooner or later anyway. Now, I'm not talking about religious beliefs, which are based on faith and not reason, but if you believe that in reference to what we were talking about a minute ago, that extreme individualism is the only way to happiness, and nobody's ever argued with that, nobody's ever presented any other point of view, I don't see how anybody could really even call that a belief. You can't believe something that's never been questioned. That's a prejudice, not a belief. And we all, sooner or later, are bound to lose some of our prejudices. And I tell students, face these issues early in life when you can deal with them. Don't wait until you're 60 years old and then start wondering about what the value of your life was. Worry about it now when you can do something about it.
You've been listening to Soundings, putting ideas into circulation in conversations originating from the National Humanities Center. Your host was Wayne Pond. We're interested in your comments. Write to us at the National Humanities Center, Post Office Box 12256, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Director of the Center is William Bennett. Soundings is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and distributed by the Public Affairs Broadcast Group, Los Angeles, California.
This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center with an invitation for you to listen for the Center's radio program, Soundings. The topic this week is the place of the classics in contemporary society. My guests are two scholars at the center who are authorities on classical literature and culture. Please join me this week for Soundings.